Me gusta mucho. Una mujer muy violencia y elegante. Think what I've just said. A very elegant and violent woman, which I think does sum up Griselda Blanco.
I love Paul Dano. So
He was in the Fablemans, wasn't he?
Was he?
Bert Fablemans.
Hmm.
Not that
Right.
memorably.
I mean, it sounds absolutely fascinating, lads, but I think this is where I go into my own TARDIS and regenerate into some household chores.
This podcast was recorded remotely and contains adult themes and language.
Hello and welcome to TVDNA, our watch list and University Challenge episode. My name is Adam Henning, and joining me to talk about Griselda on Netflix is Damien Cooper.
Hola a todos.
And joining me to talk about The Eighth Doctor, it's Mr. Neil Shepek.
Hola, sodos.
So we're going to kick off with the watch list bits first, and then we'll get to the Hooniversity Challenge. And our featured show this week is Griselda. Now, this is the story of a mother of three escaping a bad domestic situation whilst trying to set up her own business. And that business is breaking kneecaps and selling cocaine.
I haven't watched this, to be clear. So I want Adam and Damo to persuade me either to watch it or that actually I could spend my time in better ways.
What did you think, Damo?
Me gusta mucho. It was absolutely brilliant. I've watched all of it. And I think Sofia Vergara is brilliant. I think the rest of the cast is great. There are, I think, a couple of returning faces from Narcos, Mexico, although they're playing different people. So that's quite fun. The only bad thing I have to say about it is it doesn't have as good a theme tune as Narcos, because that is now firmly back in my head. But I think it's really well made. I would not be surprised to see it being on the short lists, definitely the long lists for Emmys and etc. next year.
In the limited series, definitely, I think they would stand a good shout. So far, I've only watched the first two episodes, but I'm definitely in and will finish this. That is one of my favourite things I'm watching at the moment. If you want a bit of encouragement, Neil, Pablo Escobar, there's a quote from Pablo Escobar at the top of the first episode, and it says, "The only man I was ever afraid of was a woman, and her name was Griselda Blanco."
Oh, wow. Okay, that immediately got me hooked.
But yeah, she's brilliant in this. Absolutely brilliant, I think. And pretty hardcore.
Yeah. Una mujer muy violencia y elegante. My Spanish is absolutely shit. I think what I've just said, a very elegant and violent woman, which I think does sum up Griselda Blanco.
Yeah, it definitely does. There's a lot of toilet business in that first episode. There's talk of, well, she has to deal with an injury in an interesting way. But then there's talk of poop and leaving the seat down. Does that toilet stuff continue beyond the second episode?
I would be lying if I said toilets weren't a recurrent theme, certainly towards the end of the series. But I wouldn't necessarily say the Baños is an important character.
Cool. I was already in from the first episode, but I think the second episode is even better when you get sort of a lot of Colombian women arriving, and the way that they're transporting drugs, I think, is quite interesting, and a really brilliant, tense ending to that second episode as well. So I'm utterly gripped by this. I've got a question, though. So what do drug dealers do after they've ripped open a kilo of coke with a knife? Do they then, like, cling film it up, gaffer tape? What's the, you know, they would get a big, big brick of coke. They always open it up with a knife. Yeah, what's the deal?
I'll say in the first instance, listeners, I know Adam sniffed after he said a big load of coke. I think it's because he's got a cold. I don't think he's indulging in the product. But I was thinking the exact same thing, because I think it was Rafa is just so exuberant in his testing. No, not Rafa. It's whoever is it, the big connect. Amilcar, is it? In Miami, just absolutely rips into that bundle of coke. My other issue is, and it happens all the time and it always pisses me off, as you can imagine, we're in Miami, it's in the 70s, people are doing loads of coke, so there is a lot of time spent in a nightclub, and somehow people are having softly spoken conversations quite a distance away from each other and still being able to understand what they're saying.
You said it's, that's interesting, right? I thought I'd read that this was set in the 90s. And I'm watching it going, there's a lot of really sort of 70s fashion going on and music. It doesn't feel that 90s. And I just double checked. It's set in the late 1970s and the early 1980s. That's where we're at. Maybe I'm confusing it with Sexy Beast, which is the other violent show that I've been watching this week. But yeah, I think the violence in this is really well done. There's quite a few shows, certainly, that I've been watching that have particularly violent episodes in them. And I think this is sort of really well-crafted stuff. And it's only used really when it's absolutely needed to. And when it is used, it's quite shocking, I think.
And, you know, that continues throughout the series. I don't think it's much of a spoiler that Griselda obviously becomes infamous. And as always with that world, stuff catches up with you. I won't say any more than that. But I just think it's really well-paced, really well-plotted. I don't think there were many times I was kind of like, this is bullshit. The one thing that I did find quite funny is that she has a boy called Michael Corleone Blanco.
Isn't one of her other sons called Uber?
Yeah, Uber, Dixon, and, oh, it's not Umberto. Well, who's the other one? I can't remember. Yeah, but Uber, I kept on thinking that as well.
I think this is really well made. I think the pacing, as you say, it's lean in its pacing. It sort of doesn't waste any time getting from one moment to the next. And yeah, I'm definitely thoroughly enjoying this. It's bright, it's colourful, and it's gripping stuff.
Yeah, I think for those who are fans of Narcos and Narcos Mexico, this does scratch an itch. And I hope that its success means that we see similar levels of high quality criminal thrillers from around Latin America being told. Only six episodes at less than an hour each. And I think the other thing that it does really well is hard not to root for Griselda Blanco, I'd say. But equally, I think the way they write the law enforcement, the CENTAC, which is something you're going to see in an episode or two, Adam, I think all of that side of it is really interesting as well. We have this agent, I can't remember her name now, but Latina agent, working to try and bring Griselda down. And we have these two looked down upon for the fact that they are women and Latinas at that. So that kind of those two storylines going side by side is also a really interesting parallel.
Yeah, there's a nice contrast between the way that Griselda's being treated by these people that she's trying to do business with and the way that she's not a detective, is she? But she's working on the side of the law, the way that she's being treated by her bosses and the people that she works with.
June Hawkins is the character she plays. June Hawkins.
I can't wait to watch more of this. Have we convinced you, Neil?
Yeah, definitely. I'll probably watch the first episode tonight.
Great stuff.
It sounds great. I love Narcos.
Great. Well, Neil, do you want to tell us a bit about what you've been watching?
I've been following the Oscar noms that only came out a couple of days as of recording. Tried to see Poor Things on Friday, but it was sold out, which I was slightly surprised at because I wouldn't have thought it would be an Oppenheimer or a Barbie where everyone was rushing to see it. So I watched The Holdovers instead. Really solid film. I would heartfully recommend it. Paul Giamatti is amazing in it, as are the rest of the cast. I don't think it's going to win any awards. We'll come to our predictions later on, but I would hugely recommend.
I've been listening to a little bit of Oscar chat on the various podcasts I listen to, and Divine Joy Randolph is being widely tipped for the supporting actress from The Holdovers.
She is very good. She is very good, but I haven't seen enough of the other films to be able to say whether she would win, but she is extremely good in it, yeah.
Great stuff. Anything else from you then?
No, apart from finishing The Traitors and then binge-watching The Traitors Australia yesterday, all 9 episodes, or 10 episodes. It was, it's brilliant, if you like that kind of thing. How did Reluca find it, Damo?
It's really difficult because it's so easy to spoil this second season of Traitors Australia. So I've got to be really careful. Let's just say there was significant frustration for a lot of it. There is someone who is just unbelievably dense. and I don't know how. I don't know how she operates as a medical professional, I think, as well, which is really quite something. But yeah, I think I agree. I don't want to give anything away, but if you like the traitors, whether you are a traitor hunter or team traitor, when you watch it, the arc of this second series is something to experience. I hated it, but Raluca loved it. And being around that made me think, well, yeah, if you like this show, you will enjoy season two. It's also the last one because they've cancelled it.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. And I also loved it. I think it's a huge shame they cancelled it because both of the Australian Traitor series has been so watchable and addictive.
We started the first episode of Traitors Australia last night, quite late, both fell asleep watching it. But I was a little bit anxious because the first season of the Australian version, there were some really, really brilliant people in there. And this second one, I was like, I don't like any of them. And they've got reality stars in there as well, which is what the US version did. So I was really sort of nervous. So I'm kind of encouraged by both Neil's and Raluca's reaction to season two of the Australian Traitors. And I
think you'll love it and, you know, look forward to waking up at 6 a.m.
I'd be interested, Adam, if you seem to have an affinity with Sam. That's all. That's all I'll say.
Okay, I'll look out for him. So, Damo, what have you been watching?
We might have to start calling you the sheriff. I watched all of Griselda and True Detective. Make sure you listen to our pods. Focusing on True Detective Night Country is brilliant. The other show that I've watched is I'm continuing to watch Gladiators on iPlayer, and it's everything you would expect it to be. My only qualm is, well, I have two qualms. One that I've already covered ad nauseum is that Barney Rubble, or whatever his name is, should not be anywhere near hosting that. Bradley Walsh, yes, he's amazing. Barney, or whatever his name is, Barnes, whatever. No, please. If it comes back for another series, get someone else because he's not up to it. And the final issue is, I do think the gladiators are being too nice and easy on them.
Oh, you can't have nice gladiators.
I mean, yeah, there's a couple that are supposed to be the villains. One is kind of your classic villain. The other one is not. Is trying really hard and is failing. But yeah, they just, but equally, Gauntlet. I remember in the 90s, people hardly ever got through Gauntlet. And in this one, people are getting through Gauntlet easily pretty much every single time. So I don't know. I don't want to be one of those back in my day kind of people, but I do feel a little bit like they're having it easy.
I wonder whether that's a reaction to the kind of divisive society we are currently living in. I mean, there was trouble at a Wolves-West Brom match in the FA Cup today. And I wonder whether that is a decision by the producers and that maybe we do need to be a bit more loving and considerate to each other, even in a game show like The Gladiators.
I guess, but when you're lining up for duel and you're hitting each other with the massive Q-tips, you do have to go for it.
Yeah, we want to see a bit of violence on our screens. Speaking of which, I mentioned already Sexy Beast, and this is another incredibly violent show, but very authentic in the way that it handles it. I think if you like things like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, that sort of gangster thing, this is a really, really well-made show. I only watched the first episode so far, but we get Tamsin Grieg like you've never seen her before. She's phenomenal in this.
Is she the sexy beast?
No. She is the sister of Ben Kingsley's character from the film, who's played in this brilliantly by Eamon Elliott, who's in The Gold, who's been in Game of Thrones, loads of other stuff. He plays the young Don, and he channels Ben Kingsley, again, brilliantly. There's a few no-nos and there's some definite yes-yeses going on. I think the sexy beast is Sarah Green, who plays Dee Dee. She's a porn actress. There is a couple of scenes in a porn shoot, so this is definitely adult watching. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the first episode for this. I think it's got a good cast and it's really well made. I think it's one of those where actually it's adding to the content that it's previously based on. And it's kind of different enough to be worthwhile. It's on Paramount Plus. I think there's 3 episodes out so far. I'm not sure how many there's going to be in total, but I am quite enjoying that. Also been watching Has Been Hotel, 2 episodes into this one. This is the animated adult musical on Prime Video. There's some great comedic songs in here. You've got demons. Lucifer's daughter sets up a hotel to redeem some hell dwellers and reduce the population because Heaven's solution is an annual brutal extermination. It does go a little bit too far for me in the second episode, just the constant swearing, but the songs and the satire are quite strong in this. So if you do enjoy adult animation or musicals, then I think Hazbin Hotel would be a good watch. Just be warned, strong language is included throughout. The other new shows that I've been watching, and well, another animated show, Carol at the End of the World. I mentioned this last time Neil and I recorded. Basically, the story is a planet is going to destroy the world in 7 months' time. So what would you do with the rest of the time you have left?
Usually dance, usually drink, usually bubble.
Watch The Traitors Australia.
Well, Carol does the laundry, goes to the supermarket and pays her credit card bill. She's very much at odds with how to behave differently, brilliantly contrasting with everyone else who are seizing the day, but really aren't that different to how they were before. I've only, again, only watched one episode of this, and it's a little bit of misery comedy, but there's a really lovely final twist at the end of the first episode. So eventually I will watch more of this. I've got so much on my list at the moment. I've parked it for the time being. That's a animated show on Netflix. And then the final new show that I've been watching is Masters of the Air on Apple TV Plus. And this is epic, gorgeous, stunning visuals, everything you would expect it to be, given that it's the matching up of the team behind the Banner Brothers and Apple TV. Again, you get lots of characters introduced in the first episode. We meet sort of pretty much everyone who's going to have a story later on, I think. The two main characters are Bucky and Buck, very similar nicknames. It just gives you a really brilliant view of kind of what it was like to be in a bomber. They're in American bombers. Even the geography of the planes, where you've got the two pilots at the front, your tail gunner, they've got these two machine guns either side, and then a gunner underneath as well, and then the navigator. And so there's a good number of them on each plane. And then you get these German fighters that just come speeding past them, and they've got to try and defend these bombers from the German fighters. The air combat stuff is fascinating, I think. Ultimately, the lesson of episode one is you can't prepare someone for what that sort of aerial combat will be like. And yeah, Barry Keoghan has a more prominent role in the second episode. There's two out at the moment. They're coming out weekly on Fridays on Apple TV. Loving it. Really good.
I'm guessing between that and Saltburn, maybe that's why he was barely in the final season of Top Boy. He was a very busy lad.
Yeah. I do feel like I've seen an awful lot of Barry Keoghan, especially at the end of Saltburn. A couple of shows I've finished. I finished Class of 09. This is on Disney Plus. It's really an exploration into AI, the potential, the dangers and the limitations of that. Cloaked in the dramas of four FBI recruits and their paths that their careers take them on. There's some strong set pieces in this. It's otherwise quite a slow pace and a fairly confusingly split story. So you get scenes of their training in the past, scenes of what they're going through in the present and the cases that they're working on, and then in the future when the AI has really taken control. And I feel like it perhaps would have been better served if it had been three longer episodes, maybe movie-length episodes. Might have served the story a little bit better. But overall, I did really enjoy watching it, and I would recommend Class of 09 if that sort of thing is your bag. The only other one I finished is True Love. It does take a little bit of a turn in the fifth episode, although it definitely earned the right to do that. And I didn't see the turn coming. I was expecting something to happen, but it wasn't what did happen. And I think it was a really good twist in that show. The final couple episodes, I think, are really gripping. True Love, I think, is a really strong show. Well done, Channel 4. And the only other thing I wanted to mention was Killers of the Flower Moon, which I don't think I finished last time we recorded. And I think I may have been a little bit harsh in my summation of this previously. Definitely has its qualities, but it was just a little bit too long and slow to hold my interest. But I can see what he was doing, and I think there are definitely some brilliant performances in there. I'm not as negative about it as I previously was.
I've not watched it yet, but obviously I will leading up to the Oscars. But I've already decided I'm going to watch it in two batches. I've heard it's like over 3 hours. Who knows? Maybe I will be engrossed and I'll want to finish it. Maybe starting off, I ought to give myself that amount of time in case that I am engrossed.
Yeah, I can see it like a film that you could start watching maybe first thing in the morning when you're really fresh and awake and you've got a good, maybe a pot of coffee next to you.
That doesn't sound like one of my mornings, Adam.
Fair enough. Okay, let's talk about the shows that are coming out in the coming week. I'll kick us off with Domino Day, which comes to the BBC on the 31st of January, which is Wednesday, I believe. Domino Day is a 24-year-old Londoner out on a date with finance bro Jason in a swanky Manchester bar. She works as a barista in a local coffee bar and also happens to be a witch. The type of witch who needs to feed. It stars Sienna Kelly and it's created and written by Lauren Sequeira. Manchester-based?
I have no problem with it being in Manchester. It's more that she is a barista that happens to be a witch who needs to feed. That's the bit where I'm a bit turned off.
Yeah, to be honest, that doesn't persuade me to watch it at all. I've got better things to do, like trim my beard and wash my hair.
Well, if you like that sort of fantasy stuff, then maybe up your street. I'll check out the first episode and report back next week.
Well, something else that starts on that same day on Disney Plus is Black Cake. Eleanor Bennett loses her battle with cancer, leaving her children a flash drive that holds untold stories of her journey from the Caribbean to America. The stories shock her children and challenge everything they know about their family's origin. It's based on the New York Times bestselling book by Charmaine Wilkerson, and it stars Chipo Chung, Bashi, Mia Isaac, and Kara Horgan.
And Kara Horgan, I have directed previously in a show at the Space Theatre.
Nice.
Yeah. Delighted to see her in the cast for this. But yeah, I think this one looks fascinating. I think this will be quite an emotional show. It's got a good trailer to it. Chipo Chung I've seen in a number of different things before. And I think she's really good. So yeah, I'm intrigued by Black Cake, definitely. But the one we've all been waiting for is Mr. and Mrs. Smith, coming to Prime Video on the 2nd of February. John and Jane Smith become secret agents for a mysterious organization. Their work puts both their skills as spies and their relationship to the test. The two have to deal with a world full of dangers. And this stars Maya Erskine and Donald Glover as Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but also Michaela Cole, Paul Dano, and John Turturro. So pretty impressive cast involved in this. I think the big difference between this and the film is that in a film, they are secret agents. They're a married couple. They're secret agents. They don't know each other as secret agents. In this series, they are strangers who are put together, and their cover is that they get married, essentially, so that they can work together on cases.
The thing of interest to me is that Paul Dano's in it. It feels like he hasn't done anything in a while, and he's a fantastic actor.
Wasn't he in one of the Oscar films last year, maybe? I've definitely seen him in something in the last year or so. I can't remember what it was.
I agree. He's an amazing actor. At the moment, it's There Will Be Blood, that his performance absolutely sticks with me. I would give it a go. I didn't like the film with Brad and Angelina, but yeah, I would give it a go. I love Paul Dano. So
he was in The Fabelmans, wasn't he?
Was he?
By Bert Fabelman. Hmm. Not that memorably. Right. Some other stuff we've got coming out this week. Here We Go Season 2. I don't know that I was aware of Here We Go Season 1, but this is a comedy starring some brilliant people, including Jim Howick, Catherine Parkinson, Alison Steadman, and Tori Alan Martin, who has also performed at the Space Theatre. If you want to come and see the televisual stars of the future, you need to get yourself down to the Isle of Dogs, come and see some shows at the Space.
Well, if I didn't need any more persuasion to come down to the Space, you've absolutely done that, Adam.
I think let's not also forget that both Nick Hearn and Brett Goldstein have also performed at the Space.
Yeah, indeed, as has Sir Ian McKellen. It wasn't where Ian began his career, but he has also performed there.
It's where he peaked, let's be honest.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, Here We Go Season 2 comes out on the 2nd of February on the BBC, and Death in Paradise Season 13 comes out also on the BBC on the 4th of Feb. I've never watched any Death in Paradise, and I don't think I ever will.
No, neither have I. My dad loves it, but I know people who have been in it, and it is supposed to be one of the sweetest gigs going, because you get flown out to Martinique. You have a day or two to acclimatise. You maybe film for one or two days. You have another couple of days before you get flown back. What's not to love about that job?
That sounds brilliant. Should we cover some TV news?
Well, we've already talked a little bit about Traitors Australia season two, but we've got the US and New Zealand versions to follow later in the year, I'm assuming on iPlayer.
Yeah, it's going to be the Kiwi version is going to be quite interesting, right? Because I feel like as a nation, they are generally a lot nicer. Is that fair? Is that the sort of sense you get from New Zealanders generally?
I mean, it's probably between them and the Canadians for who are the nicest people in the Anglosphere, right?
Yeah, I've never met a New Zealander I didn't like. Let's put it that way.
So are you saying it's going to be someone just be like, oh, I'm really sorry, actually, I'm a traitor. Vote me out straight away. Guys, you should have the money.
that would be lovely to see.
Maybe they'll bring some Australians in and they'll just put on an accent, but they'll be the traitors.
Yeah, could you imagine an international traitors game?
Yeah, that would be incredible.
Bring in an American, bring in a Russian, bring in a British person and see how it plays out.
They should bring in all the finalists from the various different versions.
You heard it here first.
We have had a whole load of new release dates coming out. So Our Flag Means Death, which has sadly been cancelled, but season two will come out on the 5th of February. Also, the second part of the second season of Invincible will come to Prime Video on the 14th of March. And the third and final season of Star Wars The Bad Batch is being released on the 21st of February. I don't think I got to the end of the first season of The Bad Batch, and it's always been something I wanted to go back to and watch more of. But watching the trailer for the third season did, again, make me think I should bump it up my list.
Yeah, same here. It's something that I really do want to watch, but I've always had something else to watch as a priority, either for this or for just I really wanted to watch something else. I want to be sped up for The Bad Batch when the final season comes out.
How much are you missing Jonathan Banks from your screens?
I would love to have him back on my screens, maybe in a show with Noomi Rapace. That's definitely not how you say her name. Constellations is coming. What do we have a date for that? Just that the trailer's dropped on Apple TV.
Yeah, it's landing on the 21st of February.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I only had a brief look at the trailer. I can't remember right now whether it's connected with the play that was on at the National.
I don't think it is. I think this is a science fiction thriller. So there's elements of this set in space, but it's a science fiction. I think it's a psychological thriller. It's what it is. And it's about the sort of, she goes into space and she has issues with her memory. And I think he's the guy who's trying to help her through that. That's my understanding of it based on the trailer. We've had some casting news.
Yeah, talking about Constellations, the makers of the Gilmore Girls have cast Yannick Truesdale, Charlotte Gainsbourg and Simon Callow in the ballet comedy coming to Prime Video.
Yeah, and we've also had more casting news from The White Lotus. We seem to get a bit more every week. But Walton Goggins, who I love from The Shield, Amy Lou Wood from Sex Education, and Patrick Schwartz, a Nepo baby, who was in... what was the boys spin-off, Gen V, recently. They've all been added to the White Lotus Season 3 cast, and it is now shaping up to be an incredible cast for that third season. Cannot wait for that.
Get to the daddy's cold tales.
He's very good. I really like Patrick Schwarzenegger. To be fair to him, I think he does have talent. I thought he was really brilliant in that Gen V show, and I think he's perfect casting, actually, for the White Lotus. Finally, then, Annabelle Scully and Colin Morgan are going to star in their new BBC thriller, Dead and Buried. But yeah, I don't have any more details on that. Oh, and the other thing we should say is that Alison Janney is going to be in The Diplomat season two.
So exciting. As if I couldn't be more excited for season two of this. An absolute bona fide legend joins the cast.
Yes, indeed. Back to the White House for Alison Janney. Okay, I think it's time now to move on to our Hooniversity Challenge. Do we want to kick off with the quiz so that Damo can join in with that?
We've not spoken at all about Paul McGann's one and only, well, maybe not one and only, but his main entrance as the Doctor. But yeah, we can do the quiz.
Okay, let's do the quiz first, and then we'll talk about that 1996, I think, wonderful TV movie. So... all three of Paul's brothers are actors, but which one did he star alongside in the TV serial The Hanging Gale? Was it A, Joe, B, Stephen, or C, Mark?
I'm going to go for Joe.
I'm going to go for the middle answer. I can't remember who that is.
Stephen McGann. Well, I'm afraid to tell you, I've gone with early with the trick question. It was all three of them. That show featured all four McGann brothers in one show. Mark McGann also auditioned for the role of the Eighth Doctor. That must have been awkward at the next family dinner. At age 17, Paul auditioned for RADA, but where was he working at the time? Was he working at a chemist's, a shoe shop, or a fast food establishment?
Shoe shop. Middle answer.
Yeah, I'm going to go shoe shop as well.
And you're both correct. He was working in a shoe shop when his teacher recommended that he audition for RADA. He got in, and whilst at RADA, Paul performed a scene from an adaptation of Macbeth in front of the Queen. Who performed the soliloquy from Hamlet at the same event? Was it A, Tim Roth, B, Colin Firth, or C, Kenneth Branagh?
I know Tim Roth went to Rosebery Third. Sorry, who were the other two?
Colin Firth and Kenneth Branagh.
It's Kenneth Branagh every day of the week.
I'm going to go Kenneth Branagh.
Is the correct answer. I couldn't throw you off with other members of the Brit Pack, unfortunately. So during rehearsals for With Nail and I, Paul was fired. For what reason? A, his Scouse accent. B, turning up late due to a hangover. Or C, arguing with the director.
Has to be arguing with the director. I mean, turning up with a hangover just fits, you know, With Nail and I. I think it's arguing with the director.
I'm going to go with the Scouse accent.
It is the Scouse accent is the right answer, I'm afraid, Neil. They tried other actors in the role, and eventually Paul McGann managed to persuade Mr. Robinson that he could do a different accent, and that's what they went with in the end. He was also the original actor for Sharp before King of the North, Sean Bean, but he injured his knee playing football, so couldn't take the role on. Obviously, the Eighth Doctor, and only in one TV movie on the screens, he did a lot of audio dramas. How many years after his introduction did the Eighth Doctor finally regenerate? Was it A, 15, B, 17, or C, 19?
Wow, okay. So in my notes, I know it was 1996 that his film came out. I'm going to say 15 years.
What were the numbers again?
15, 17, and 19.
I'm going to go middle answer again.
It was the middle answer, I'm afraid, Neil. It was 17. So Damon's absolutely trounced you in this round of University Challenge quiz.
So that means I've got a perfect score, right? Because although it was a trick question, the answer I gave was correct. So was Neil's. So that's four marks.
I think that might be a 5 out of 5, yeah. Although you didn't say the real correct answer would have been all three.
Yeah, but you should have put that as an option.
There's a trick question every week.
but they've still started a film with them, so it's still correct.
Yeah, all right. Well, fair enough. We'll give you that. Damo, are you going to stick with us to hear about Paul McGann's TV movie of the 1990s?
I mean, it sounds absolutely fascinating, lads, but I think this is where I go into my own TARDIS and regenerate into some household chores. But it was an absolute joy, as always. I shall retire from this episode a perfect champion, and I look forward to listening to your discourse on it when I hear the episode edited.
Bye! You're also not going to be around for our True Detective episode. Oh, he's gone. Damien's away next week. He's obviously going to make an early start on packing, but he's not going to be with us for True Detective. We are going to be joined instead by Grace Chapman, but that's for later. Let's talk about this. Paul McGann, the Eighth Doctor. What did you think, Neil?
In hindsight, I found it quite painful to watch. It was very much... Oh, Damon's back.
Did I do a chat there? Sorry.
You did. I was just explaining that you're not going to be on the True Detective episode next week because you're away, but the Grace will be taking your place.
Well, how fitting that I should leave the Zoom really quickly then. All right, then. Bye!
Bye!
Is he finally gone?
He's gone now, yeah. Carry on. What were you saying there?
He was saying that in hindsight, watching the show, a lot of money was put into it, and there was a huge nod to making it more international with the Americans, which was also really clear during the Matt Smith era. I thought it was good. I kind of feel like Paul McGann was cast as a heartthrob. There was kisses with Grace, the kind of companion sort. One of the worst portrayals of the Master that I think I've ever seen. What I did like about it is it was watchable and it kind of bridged a gap before the whole series was revamped by Russell T. Davis with Christopher Eccleston. And I'm so grateful that that happened because I've absolutely loved so much of what Russell T. Davis has done with the Doctor.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? He was definitely more of a Casanova type of Doctor, much more than we'd ever seen. It gave a new meaning to the name Companion, that she was very much a love interest in this. And I remember watching this. I would have been 20 when this came out. And I remember watching this and feeling that Paul McGann would be a really good Doctor. And I think that's still the case. I mean, there are rumours that he's going to return in a new spin-off.
Doctor really? Stories.
Yeah, a new TV spin-off. And Disney are quite happy for all of this extra stuff around the IP, as it were. It was such a 90s TV film. The influences were clear. You had the Amazing Grace, as she was called, who was this very cultured surgeon who was crying at the opera, but also had her beeper on at the opera. You know, very much sort of Pretty Woman vibes going on as she's rushing through the room in her opera gown. The depiction of the Master was, I felt, had quite sort of Terminator vibes to it.
Yeah.
But there was some good CGI as this sort of ooze almost that was the Master sort of developed and grew. But there were elements of gothic horror in this, elements of rom-com, elements of Doctor Who and sci-fi and that sort of stuff, elements of kind of action film. So it felt like a real throw everything at it and see if it works type of experiment. And clearly it didn't work because this was a co-production, I think, between the BBC and maybe Universal, I think it was, who had the rights for Doctor Who at that time. And this was meant to be a sort of extended pilot for what would be then a further series of the show. And whilst it was well received in the UK, it wasn't well received enough in the States for them to go on, and they couldn't find anyone else to buy it. But I think that's part of the reason that we had to wait so long for Doctor Who to come back, was for the rights to revert to the BBC.
That kind of makes sense. I mean, I don't blame America for not taking on at that point, although they did fund La La Land. You know, it became a TV film. What about the plot? Let's just cover that. So we start off with Sylvester McCoy, and I'm really impressed that they got him to come back for the scenes that he did to justify the regeneration. We didn't actually see a regeneration. Do you think that's maybe the first time that we haven't seen a regeneration?
Yeah, well, apparently it happens in an episode, in a mini episode called Night of the Doctor in 2013, that he actually gets his regeneration moment. And I believe he turns into a different Doctor played by John Hurt. I haven't seen that episode, but it might be worth having a little look into where that fell. But yeah, it was obviously it was always intended that he was going to continue on as the Doctor in a TV series, and then that never happened. And then our ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, yeah, they clearly couldn't get him back in to do any sort of regeneration work there, or maybe it just wasn't right for what they wanted to do with that story.
No, because I looked at the beginning of Christopher Eccleston's Doctor and see if there was any regeneration, and it wasn't. But yeah, I might have a look at that episode that you mentioned.
Well, speaking of Christopher Eccleston now, unless there's anything else you want to cover with Paul McGann, I mean, there's not a lot to say about the story, in that the Doctor ends up there at New Year's Eve on 1999, which I guess is a key time, and he sort of saves a young lad who's about to be gunned down in some sort of drugs-related crime stuff. But he's lost his memory. Right. There's a whole sequence where he ends up in the hospital and has a probe put in his chest, and they're looking at his two hearts. But he loses his memory, and most of the film is about him relearning who he is. Meanwhile, the Master's there, and he's trying to sort of... the Master's used all of his lives and is being transported back to Gallifrey, but somehow recovers and takes possession of this chap. And eventually, the Doctor wins the day, and that's pretty much the storyline, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is an enjoyable TV film. particularly if you like the Doctor. I know I missed you earlier, Adam, as in case you had any info. Is it the first time that the Doctor is referred to as having two hearts? And also 13 lives, and that does fit in with the Master, how many lives they've got.
I've just done a quick Google search. I definitely think the two hearts is something that's been brought up previously. But the regeneration, I've just had a quick Google, and apparently this was first brought up in 1976, that he could regenerate 12 times. And obviously, he the 13th Doctor is Jodie, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so David Tennant's 10th, Matt Smith 11th, Capaldi 12th, Jodie Whittaker 13th. And it is when he regenerates into the 14th Doctor that we get this bi-regeneration thing, right?
Yes, but it was with River Song that more lives were given to him.
Okay, fine.
River Song gave regenerative power to the Doctor, and that meant he could regenerate more times, and I think that was with Matt Smith's Doctor.
It was variously established that 1976, 1983 and 1996 that there could only be 13 incarnations before he died permanently. But they've clearly found a way around it. Anyway.
You don't know, do you?
I don't. My lack of Doctor Who lore is being brutally exposed by the fact that I have no idea.
Him being able to continue after 13 or 12 lives was definitely established with River Song, I think with Matt Smith, that he could regenerate more times, infinitely, it seems. And that's obviously great for the franchise, and we wouldn't have Cheetah Gatwa otherwise. It seems like Adam is frozen now. Oh, am I the only one with decent internet? Oh, Adam's back, and he's the host now.
Sorry.
One of the things that I loved as an Easter egg in this TV film was the Jelly Babies, which was that Tom Baker who established the Jelly Babies? So, yeah, I thought that was really cool. The fact that they looked at the millennial countdown 4 years in advance, I mean, let's face it, you know, computer scientists were looking at the millennial countdown and thinking we were all going to die or all power on Earth was going to end. So it was very kind of fitting. I thought that was very cool as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very 90s. It's incredibly 90s, but I think it was a good, enjoyable romp as a Doctor Who episode. And I think Paul McGann, it's a shame that he didn't get more time as the Doctor because I think he's really, really good at it.
Well, he was the heartthrob. He was the hunk that I guess they felt they needed for a film. He does well, and it is great that he has reappeared, but not properly.
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll see him in a spin-off in the future. But Christopher Eccleston also had a fairly short run, just one season as the Doctor. And I've got three episodes or three choices for you here, Neil. The first one is The Parting of the Ways. This is the Ninth Doctor's final episode, and it's an epic encounter with the Daleks. The second choice is Dalek. The Doctor is shattered and Earth is in danger as he and Rose discover the Time Lord's deadliest enemy beneath Utah. So two Dalek-based episodes. And then the third choice is a two-parter, The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances. Homeless children in wartime London are terrorised by an unearthly child. Plus, we meet a certain Captain Jack.
What a choice. I watched the beginning of Bros because I wanted to see if there was anything about the regeneration between Paul McGann and Christopher Eccleston, and there isn't. I loved the Daleks, but I also love Captain Jack. So if the choice is left up to me, I'm going to go Captain Jack because he's a character that is very iconic, obviously was a large part of the spin-off. I was going to say Bad Wolf. It's not Bad Wolf, is it? What's the spin-off called? Adam's just looking over Google at the moment because he doesn't know either. It's not Bad Wolf. There's a spin-off. He's about to tell us when it comes up on his Google search.
Torchwood.
Torchwood! Of course it is. So, yeah, I'm going to go for Captain Jack.
Yeah, okay, I'm more than happy with that. I think the Doctor Dances on one blog I read was the best Christopher Eccleston episode, and that's the second of these two. So yeah, I think we will return to the Daleks at some point, obviously.
Yeah,
now is not the time. So we're going to be watching The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances, two Christopher Eccleston episodes that we'll be talking about next time around on the Hooniversity Challenge. In a few days' time, we're going to be talking about the third episode of True Detective, Night Country, which is a phenomenal show. But yeah, do have a listen to our back catalogue. Our Mr. Bates versus the Post Office has had a whole load of listens and is now our 10th most listened to episode. And we'll be over 250 episodes. That's no small feat. So do check that out. If you want to get in touch with us, let us know what you're watching. You can contact us on the social media at TVDNAPod, or you can email TVDNAPod@gmail.com. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. And as always, Neil, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey.
Can we pause for 2 seconds while I fill my glass? Demo? Demo, you're frozen with your hand in there.
I feel like I'm watching Ice Age, Demo.
Maybe turn your video off.
Bad Batch or what? Wasn't worth it, was it? Jesus Christ.
What a wait.
It was funny 5 minutes ago when I first said it. The delay is that bad.
Was it? Was it funny 5 minutes ago?